Donalana Kitchen talks about food. Donalana Kitchen talks recipes. Donalana Kitchen talks about lots of other things on
Community Radio.
Welcome to the Donalana Kitchen. We're here in the beautiful downtown Ames KHOI studio. The sun is out. It's being springish. This is the Donalana Kitchen. We talk about food, farming, recipes, advice.
Politics.
And opinions. And politics and opinions slip in here every now and then. We talk about anything that can be talked about around a kitchen table. So join us for the next hour. We have help from lots of our friends to do this.
Oh, yes. Support comes from Wheatsfield Co-op, your full-service natural foods grocery in Ames. Community-owned, community-focused since 1974. Open daily 7 a.m. to 9 p.m. Located downtown at 413 Northwestern, just off Main Street in Ames. Everyone can shop Wheatsfield Co-op.
It's spring, more or less. We are hoping that March will go out like a lamb and give us a nice slide into April here. We're going to talk about interacting with our environment today. It's a time to interact. Yes, it is. For some of us, that means hitting a spring pothole. All right, that's interacting, yes. And others of us like
interacting with my rake yesterday.
See, you are inspired.
Globs of wet leaves composting at the front doorstep.
See?
There you go.
Things are happening out here, yes. We're looking forward to maybe going outside in a T-shirt. Yeah, that's pretty
I was. I sat in the sun yesterday.
There we go.
Got that vitamin D coming in. Oh, boy. Oh, boy.
And there's stuff happening in gardens, stuff happening in fields and orchards all over the place. We have two guests in our studio today. We have an artist and a farmer. What a good combination.
And an artist who's a farmer and a farmer who's an artist.
Yes. Yeah. Well, yeah, we
something
just
like
kind
that.
Of, yeah.
Generous.
I think all farmers are artists, you know.
We do.
It is the ultimate act of creativity.
I think so. Very much so. The first person we're going to talk to is Sherry Sampson, and we also have Julia Slocum with us. So, Sherry Sampson is an environmental performance and video artist. She's visiting Ames to be part of a lecture tonight on campus. She works in remote and rural spaces. So she uses the outside and the growing and real things around us. She often interiorizes her body in her outdoor installations. We'll find out what that means. And contemplative movement-based rituals. She's exhibited her work in live performances, installations, and video screenings all over the place, U.S., Finland, Norway, France, Greece, Holland, Cuba, Hong Kong, Italy,
Missouri.
Yeah, there she goes.
She's a nice Midwestern. None of this New York City artist stuff, you know. She's one of us.
So welcome to the Donalana Kitchen, Sherry. Thank
yes,
you.
And Sherry will be performing tonight in Ames, in the Campanile Room, at 7 p.m. in the Memorial Union. So let's hear what she's going to be doing tonight, and then we'll go see. I keep calling it a performance. She goes, it's not a performance. She's just speaking tonight about her work. But
we'll get to see examples of things. If you can describe a visual experience to a radio audience, what would you say about your work, Sherry?
I would say that I perform in natural spaces, environments, rural, wooded, forests, many different...
Orchards.
Yeah, so I've performed for the camera as well as for live audiences in a number of different kinds of settings. So it could be a conference. I've performed in conferences in Finland that have the theme of environmental aesthetics. I've done that in Finland on a frozen river and a mire or a bog. I've also done pieces just for the camera, so it's just my body and the camera. For example, in our orchard in Northeast Missouri. And
so it's video as well as dance performance?
Yes, yeah. So I do live performances for audiences, and I also do what I would call video performances or video dances just for the camera. Excuse me. And then those pieces would be seen, for example, online, or they might be seen in a film or video screening in a film or video festival. and also sometimes like in a gallery setting where it might run for a period of a few weeks as an installation.
And what kind of music are you using to do this?
It really depends on the piece. I've collected a lot of sounds from the environments, so sometimes the environmental sounds are the auditory space in which the pieces, in which I, they're the audio track.
So you're kind of composing the audio track yourself, too, then?
Yeah, yeah, at times. Uh-huh. I've also worked a lot with the Finnish epic poem, the Kalevala, and have drawn from not only the tunes that are associated with the singing of these poems, but also the text itself. So that has informed a lot of my work over the years because of my travels and research in Finland. And then recently...
why Finland? Are you Finnish by ethnic heritage?
I actually am, yeah.
Yeah, there you
go. I'm half Finnish. Mm-hmm. And so all of my maternal ancestors came from Finland. And I had a Fulbright to Finland in 1998 while I was just postgraduate school, graduate student. And at that point, that began my multiple journeys to Finland, ultimately.
You connect your understanding of environment and your understanding of dance. That's a wonderful thing to connect together. What is your dance background?
I have both formal and informal. I have been dancing in the environment, in nature, in some capacity since my early 20s. I even started doing just go out to the woods behind my dad's, behind my parents' house, and danced back there. And this was years ago. And I was just thinking about this recently when I first met my husband. We went to Cahokia Mounds in Missouri, and this was like one of our first times together, and I danced around in the environment there, and he took a few photos. And so I've always been doing that. I do have some formal training, a little bit in modern dance. I was my graduate thesis committee included a dance professor from the University of Iowa who's now retired. And then more recently, about 7 years ago, I started studying very formally classical Indian dance, which is quite an endeavor to begin at in middle age. Usually young girls start at the age of 5 or 6, not 45.
That is a very taxing discipline as far as learning how to move your body and tell a story.
Yeah, yeah. A very storytelling dance form. It's a mimetic using a kind of form of mime to tell stories. Exactly.
Oh, wonderful. So what are the stories that you're telling when you're dancing? What do you want the viewer to experience?
Well, traditionally, and of course, in India, the stories tell, the storytelling tells many different stories of the gods, the whole pantheon, the Hindu pantheon. And it could be the antics of Krishna, but they can also be little prayers. They're called shlokas. And they might be just a prayer that's, I bow at the feet of so-and-so. And so there's a combination of very complex stories that are told to, again, more simple, just 3 or 4 line prayers. Mm-hmm. What I've been working with, what my plan is for my upcoming project is to work with the language, that storytelling language of the dance, which uses hand gestures and facial expressions. And all of this is layered on top of a very complex system of rhythms and footwork. And I'm interested in actually doing something very different with it and telling the stories about laboring bodies on small-scale farms. So the relationship of the body to the ground and the earth and what the hands are doing, what the feet are doing, what the rhythms are, the agricultural rhythms and the bodily rhythms
See, the farmers are the artists, aren't they?
Absolutely.
And bodies moving. I think we can all relate to that, those of us who get our fingers dirty, yes. Mm-hmm. Very good. Yes, yes. So you are in process of gathering information for a new project of farmers moving in the space.
Yeah, yeah.
And it's called Hands to Earth.
Yes, yeah. Ta-da. That's the working title.
I
have
good
two
title.
Different titles, and now recently I kind of combined them. But, yeah, that's one working title. The other one that I've been batting around is The Shortest Distance, which is taken from a quote from Wendell Berry's 1977 text, The Unsettling of America. Mm-hmm. And he's actually quoting a philosopher saying, find the shortest distance between the earth, the hands, and the mouth. So those are my two working titles.
Well, it sounds you've got wonderful things to explore. So you are here in Ames, not only for this presentation tonight, but you are here to gather information, visual support, and yeah, good. So you'll be working with farmers?
Yes, yours. I hope to start with you, documenting what's a little bit tomorrow, hopefully,
okay.
On your farm, and then I'd love to hear from other farmers in the area that might be interested in my visiting their farm. Perhaps not this time, but my own farm is only 3.5 hours southeast of here, so I would love to come back to Ames and do some documenting throughout the agricultural season, some local farms as well.
Well, good. So. Julia Slocum, he is a farmer here in town.
Hi, Julia.
So what would you two do together if what would you be looking for, Sherry?
Oh, I would
of her farm.
I would be interested in looking at the environment, the overall environment of your space, and that's the physical environment, the geographical environment, the flora and fauna and the farm, but also the soundscape as well. You know, what does it sound like when you're working? What songs might you be singing? And of course, I'd be interested in documenting your work. You know, if you were in the process of work or if, you know, whatever that might be, or demonstrating what you do, and perhaps some interviews or just chit-chatting while you're working and collecting those stories as well that would then eventually get incorporated into the performance through visual media and sound, because the piece will include not only the live aspect but also projected videos and a soundscape. So it will be a kind of threefold. Yeah,
that sounds really beautiful. And I think one of the really beautiful things about, you know, this community of growers, especially I think in Central Iowa right now, is this like diversity of spaces that growers have created for themselves. Like you go to visit somebody's farm and it's like really unique to that person and their vibe, you know. So I think that's going to be a really beautiful thing to explore.
That's really great.
It's wonderful. Sherry, do you choreograph work for large groups or work as a solo artist?
I work primarily as a solo, yeah. And I'm working with a choreographer on the project. She will be mentoring me because she has, I think now, probably 25 to 30 years of experience as a dancer and also in classical Indian dance. And she's based in Kansas City, so her name is Anjali Tata Hudson. I'll be working with her. She's my dance mentor currently.
Oh, this is good. This is good.
Yeah.
Do you teach other people how to dance?
No, I'm housed in the visual art department. I
oh,
do sometimes.
You're visual. Okay.
Yeah. Okay. That's my official background, as it were. I mean, my MFA is from the University of Iowa, and it's in the Intermedia and Video Art program, which I think is now they've changed a little bit the way the curriculum is, and I think it's now part of under this umbrella of new media and social design, or excuse me, social practice. But it's basically a visual arts department, and I teach in a visual arts department at the University of Missouri. But I do sometimes have the opportunity to teach performance-based performance art, which I'm doing right now, and I also teach a video class there.
Ah, yes. Yeah. Checked out your website. Everybody should check out everybody's website. And there are images of your performances, and you treat your body as kinetic sculpture. You paint yourself, you wrap yourself, you stick all sorts of things on you, and you have at it. So
yeah,
there's a wonderful theatrical sort of way that you interact with the environment and interact with the land, and amazing stuff. If people want to see some of your work, what's your website connection there? How can they connect up with you?
It's simply my name, SherrySampson.net.
Spell it.
Yeah.
C-H-E-R. C, not S, okay?
Yeah, exactly.
Got that one?
Yeah.
C-H-E-R-I-E-S-A-M-P-S-O-N.net.
There you go. good things happening.
Or you can come see her tonight at 7 p.m. in the Campanile Room in the Memorial Union.
Yes, let's do that. The idea of spring waking up and things to celebrate and the idea...
Actually, what a perfect day for her to be performing. Well, no, you're not speaking. Performing. Speaking. Okay,
that's
it's not a performance.
That's a performance.
All right, but
too.
You will be inspiring us and kind of, we've had, 3 days of sun in a row now, so we're like ready to, this will focus us. That's a wonderful evening for you to be speaking to us tonight.
Yeah. So, Sherry, we'll say goodbye to you, but stick around because we'll be
Well, actually, we forgot to mention that she's being sponsored by not only the School of Design, but also Ag Arts. And Sherry's getting involved in getting her own Ag Arts collective down in Missouri in her hometown. You want to mention a little bit about what Ag Arts is for you?
Well, Ag Arts, what happened was I sent out an email to some people I know in Fairfield, somebody named Travis Cox, who got his degree here. And he sent it out all over his, to his people in Ames, in the Ames area. And then I heard from Adam Wright.
And who's the Ag Arts president on campus
for a student organization.
Right,
yeah.
Right.
And then through Adam... Through the website, I was poking around on the website. I saw Mary Swander's work. I became very curious about her work and asked Adam if I could meet her when I came for this visit. And he said, well, she's living in Kelowna now, so I made arrangements to meet her and did so last December. So I'm hoping to get involved. In fact, I am getting involved with the organization a media coordinator. Basically, I'll be writing artist features for the organization. I started
it's on the
one.
Ag Arts website.
Yeah, on the Ag Arts website, yeah.
So Google Ag Arts. Capital A, small g, capital A-R-T-S, one word. The whole idea of Ag Arts is really rural communities. We're a creative lot, and arts can be used to really communicate a lot of ideas about agriculture that are complex to grasp in other ways. Agriculture is a really important part of our culture. It's certainly a large industry in this country, and Ag Arts can help portray some of the issues and speak to those issues because we are agricultural in these communities.
Mm, absolutely.
Good way to do this,
yeah.
Yes. Thank you, Sherry.
Thank you.
So we'll be in we'll be front row center tonight.
Thank you.
All right, looking forward to it.
You're listening to KHOI FM 89.1 Story City in Ames. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Back. This is the Donna Lana Kitchen. Donna Lana Kitchen, we're on the air live here Tuesday at noon. You can hear us again 7 o'clock in the evening on this fine radio station. Find us anytime, khoifm.org. Go to the website. There's lots of good stuff there. You can stream things. You can archive things, or you can visit the archives. Donna Lana Kitchen even has all of our old shows if you just can't get enough of us.
Right, if you want to remember what we said a year ago about the spring weather.
Yeah. Well, it's kind of fun to look into that old history. Yes, it is. Yes. So ever since the first hint of spring weather, Donna has been asking me, what's up? What's up in the garden?
Yeah. And I want to know what she's going to grow this year. I'm always, because Lana's very willing to try new things every year. And I hope Julia is too. So as a chef, I'm always saying, couldn't we grow this? Maybe that would work here. Of course, I love carrots and potatoes and corn, but, you know, I want some new fancy things here. So what are we doing this year?
Always try new things. Oh, I love this time of year. We got big plans and starts. I grow things on Onion Creek Farm, and I'm busy out there. But it's a joy to be able to talk to someone else who has their hands in the dirt this time of year.
Julia comes up with some nice ideas, too.
Julia Slocum is with us today. Welcome, Julia.
Thank you.
Julia is a fine young farmer who has a place called Lacewing Acres. Tell us about Lacewing Acres, Julia.
Yeah, Lacewing is about 3 acres of certified organic vegetables. I started in 2013, so this will be my 4th season on my own. I'm renting from the folks out at Alluvial Brewing Company and Prairie Moon Winery. So it's a really great location.
Fine community, right? And you have wonderful. Lots of prairie around you as well.
Yeah, there's prairie. They've got plants.
Prairie and beer. Oh boy, oh boy.
Yeah, what more could you want, right?
Sounds fine to me.
Yeah, so it's a really beautiful location, really close to Ames, so it's been really
good.
Fun, yeah.
What brought you to farming? Were you always a farmer? My goodness, how did you get started?
I think I've always been drawn to farming. But I didn't think it was an option unless I had studied it formally or grown up doing it. I think, you know, I look back on my journals from growing up, and I started writing about wanting to work on farms as early as, like, high school. I don't know. I think I had a lot of, like, mental obstacles to that possibility. And I had also gone to college and kind of had my political awakening and was really passionate about environmental issues and human rights. And so after graduating from University of Iowa, I went to I traveled a bit and then landed in D.C., where I worked for an environmental nonprofit and international development agency for a couple of years. Really loved it. But I think I just had this feeling of, like, I don't want to spend my life in front of a computer, working in an office, and, you know, that I could go days without leaving cement or human-made materials.
So what brought you to Ames then?
Yeah, so I left my job, and I did a bike tour, ran out of money, moved into my mom's basement, and then applied for AmeriCorps, and I did the Conservation Corps. And through that experience, that was a year-long program based in Ames, where we traveled all over the Midwest doing prairie and woodland restoration projects. And that was like chainsaws and power tools and backing trucks with big trailers attached. And I think that, like, broke through a lot of my things that made me think that I wouldn't be able to.
You can do it. All right.
And so that was really empowering. I loved being outside all the time. So I started working on farms. I worked for a season up in Wisconsin and a season in north central Iowa at One Step at a Time Gardens. And that was both amazing experiences. And I think by July of the first season on the first farm, I was like, this is what I want to do. So became really focused after 2 seasons, came back and bartered for land with a couple out near Boone. And they were fabulous. I got going, did farmers market, started with a small CSA, grew the CSA the second year, and then last year grew even more and was doing the farmers market as well on Main Street. And I think this year I've decided to drop the farmers market. I'll be CSA.
Really?
Yeah,
we're not going to have
surprise.
You at the farmers
market? Yeah, sorry. still doing the CSA and then hopefully some, like, restaurant and wholesale.
That's one thing about my experience of being a farmer. You do have to come to the realization that during the summer, one does need to sleep occasionally. things are absolutely bounding in the summer, and yes, luckily it's grown so that yes, there is a market. People love your vegetables, but you can't do everything. And farmers market is you have to kind of, it's kind of like train for it and get up and set things. Yeah, so you have to count your losses and kind of look at that bottom line sort of thing too, don't you?
Yeah, I'm going to really miss seeing people every Saturday, but I'm not going to miss the preparation or having a rainy day with poor sales or any of that. So
there you go. Well, one thing,
Lana tried to give it up a few years ago.
I did.
But you wouldn't let her.
She got wasn't up to me. Well, she missed it, and she
yeah
got,
I did
she
yeah
bounded
I did.
Right
I did.
Back.
My husband Joe and I kind of think, well, we should, you know, retire a little bit, and we're a little less heavy lifting. And but that's one thing that I do like is the farmers market. So, and I do a little less CSA-ish sort of thing and people-to-people sales. But you do what you love. Yes, you do. Oh, and speaking of having company, there's not many farmers that have an audience. And if you go out to Julia's farm, Lacewing Acres, you can kind of sit on the patio outside the brewery, and you can watch your work.
Yeah, we don't need to advertise that, but yeah.
I think it is
possible. Yeah, perhaps
you can drink a beer and sit in the chairs and watch. Right?
It's fun. Now,
Sherry, we are thinking performance art here. There's got to be some sort of tie-in. I'm thinking perhaps tickets, or a tip box or something, because there is a joy in getting up and moving in the spring, and not you're moving, and also things are moving. So, to start to answer some of Donna's questions, what's up on your farm? What's going on right now?
Oh, so exciting. Well, I'm actually pretty new to sorrel, which I think is really old news to a lot of people.
Well, but it's annual. It's perennial. Mine is coming up.
It's already up, and it's beautiful, and it tastes fabulous. So I'm really excited about that. This is also my first year with chives, which is, super old news. So I apologize for not having,
But
super
maybe Elliot will make a sorrel and chive beer.
That sounds terrible.
I know. But the sorrel, though.
Sorrel
might work really well.
Yeah, they could do a sour
beer. It's got that lovely tang.
Yeah.
You could make a sorrel soup or some great thing with sorrel and pair it with a special type of beer.
With the beer.
Pairing evening. That sounds great, yeah. But, yeah, a lot of the perennials are coming up. The garlic is up and looking happy. And there's a lot of spinach out in the field that wasn't fully harvested, and that's has overwintered.
Lana brought some spinach in a couple of weeks ago.
Helen
Gunderson did.
I think there's a lot more we could be doing with overwintering, but I haven't.
Oh, please, do.
I'm not there yet.
these skill sets have to come. I've been learning, and I learn something every year. So you put up a greenhouse, right?
Yeah. I mean, it's a makeshift greenhouse. Uh-huh. It's a caterpillar tunnel. Mm-hmm. It doesn't currently have a door, so I crawl under the plastic.
It's good to be a young and supple person because, let's go in and see your greenhouse. You kind of have to, slide into the end, but it'll be okay. It works just fine. This woman is getting along just fine with your greenhouse.
Yeah. Well, what's in it?
Right now, it's so beautiful. The onions are up and happy.
What kind of onions?
I'm doing the red long tropea onions, which I believe they're beautiful. Okay. And then Clear Dawn, which is an organic variety, I think of a white onion. And then Elsa Craig's, which are one of my favorite fresh eating sweet onions. They're just beautiful. Good for you.
Good luck and bad luck with those. I don't know why. They're touchy little girls.
They are.
At least the Craigs.
They're so beautiful. I'm not going to give them up.
Good for you.
And then Red Wing, which is one of my favorite red onion. It's just gorgeous, bright red. They're burgundy. So, but yeah, they're just little, green strands right now.
Are they going to stay in the tunnel?
They'll stay until they get a little hardier, and then they'll move outside to harden off.
Do you move the tunnel or you move the onions?
I'll move the onions.
Okay.
Yep.
Okay.
Yep.
It's that kind of tunnel. Then.
Yep. It's where it's going to be.
Okay.
And then there are a lot of the brassica family are coming up. So the broccoli and cauliflower, the kale, kohlrabi, cabbage. I'm dropping cauliflower this year. I've had terrible luck. Mm-hmm. That was a good point to get to this winter was I'm dropping Brussels sprouts, I'm dropping cauliflower. There are just a few things that I've had trouble with every year. They're not, the super popular items of the season. So, just going to table them for now.
There are other fine growers in the area. That's how I feel about it.
Right.
Everybody has their passion. And sure. if some, those that want to do something else, that can be just fine.
Amen.
Good, good. So you've got all these wonderful little green things coming up. You were talking to me earlier about something called cute aggression. This sounds really strange, Julia. Tell us what you meant by that.
I think the definition of cute aggression is that feeling of like overwhelming, almost violence that you want to do to something that's like unbearably adorable. So that's the like grandma cheek pinching phenomenon. And you know, yeah. like little kids squeezing little animals. And I have that feeling very deeply with seedlings. Like I want to shred their leaves off.
But Julia.
I'm never going to do that. And they might quiver a little when I come into the greenhouse if they can sense it. But they're just so adorable. They're adorable.
Anything new and alive and green.
Oh,
and
the complexity. Like my horseradish is coming up and my lovage and those little furls are peeking out of the ground. I was raking leaves off of them yesterday. Yeah. In fact, I raked off and found some catnip and this morning, the cat was like, cute aggression all over it.
Maybe that's what it is. Maybe
I guess so. She just was like rolling in it. And I thought, well, is it even going to grow past its 1-inch height? But she was having so much fun. See, having her cute aggression with the catnip.
We all
it's natural,
spring.
Right?
Spring. Yes. Right now, you're probably spending a lot of time in your greenhouse, mm-hmm. but there are other things that have to happen outside because you've got, well, you said 3 acres?
Yeah. And we're going to be expanding to get some ground ready for future seasons. Mm-hmm. Once the ground dries out a bit, we'll be tilling and planting cover crop there to get that ground ready. There's some other areas of the farm that are now in rye cover crop, so I want to get that out and either plant it to another early season cover crop or get the potatoes in. That's one of the first things to go. And then also just getting the space cleaned up. I mean, things have been in storage all winter. And this is really the best time of year to, like, get your space set up in a way that makes more sense. So all of those things that were annoying frustrations in the midst of the season where you were too busy to do anything about it, I always think of the, in It's a Wonderful Life, that knob on the top of the staircase. Do you know what I'm talking about?
Is this talking. What?
No, the scene in It's a Wonderful Life when the knob at the top of the rail of the staircase that, like, makes him crazy. And, you know, at the end of the movie, he, like, kisses it because it... No,
Julie,
you know
you're strange.
Never mind. It's irrelevant. Somebody out there knows what I'm talking about, and this is going to resonate.
The post on the staircase.
Yeah.
Why does it make him crazy?
In the movie, it makes him crazy. Every time it comes off, he's like,
my life
is so difficult.
It needs to be stuck back. Yeah. Okay.
So,
okay.
like, all of those sorts of things, all of my rail knobs, like, throughout the season
the
that
things
I'm like,
that break. Oh, yes.
You make my life so hard. This is the time of season to fix those things. So
very good.
I think I know what you mean. I took the screen out of my back door because it needs to be repaired before the mosquitoes come.
Yes, exactly.
And all last summer, I kept poking it back in place. So I just took it off this morning and said, all right, I'm taking it over to Ace Hardware. It's going to get a new screen.
Yep.
That sort of thing?
Yes, exactly.
Okay.
Do it.
You're on top of it. And it will be so much better if you do, because people that do work outside with your bodies all year or all summer or all the growing season, I hate to say this, but time is money. You don't want to frustrate yourself. I think I spent my first few years so many years ago when I was starting to grow for the local market here. I think I spent the first 2 years wondering where I put my hoe. You do have to kind of like not walk up and down the field looking for things. You have to have a method for your madness.
Absolutely.
Good design. Yes. You are listening to KHOY FM. FM.org. We'll listen to a bit more music here. We've got some Scottish reels and jigs, because why not? Scottish reels and jigs. Thank you. is the Donna Lana Kitchen. KHOI Radio. We're in the kitchen today with Julia Slocum. My name's Lana Nachtigal, and we're here with Donna Priskintis. Julia Slocum is a local farmer. The world is waking up. Things are going into the ground.
She's a local vegetable farmer. So Julia already told us that she is not going to grow cauliflower and Brussels sprouts this year. So I want to know, what are you going to grow? Something new?
One thing new. I want to try rutabaga.
Oh, yes!
Really?
All right!
Wow, that is not the reaction I was expecting.
Oh, rutabaga.
All right.
Rutabaga, rutabaga. That's a Frank Zappa song. Okay. Well, okay, are you too young to know who Frank Zappa is?
I know of
Frank Zappa. Okay. Oh, good. Okay. Bless you, child. Okay. Bless you. Oh, so you like rutabaga, and Frank Zappa loves rutabaga. So, rutabaga. Oh, so that's a grow under the ground sort of thing.
That should do well here, don't you think?
We'll find out. I've never actually even eaten it that I know
no,
of.
No, you're kidding.
I promise. At least I have no memory of eating it.
Oh my goodness.
So, but I think it's beautiful, and I love root crops, and I'm mostly Swedish, so I think this should happen. Is it Swedish?
Definitely.
Swedish. Oh, you definitely should. As I understand it, rutabaga was a early intentional cross, an early intentional hybrid centuries ago. Originally, it was cabbage and a turnip because they're both the same family. They were crossed.
Whoa.
And the root.
So it's like an underground cabbage.
Yeah, it is.
Yeah, but it's much better than a turnip.
Oh, yeah.
It's creamier.
Yeah,
it's more, like, I love them mashed into potatoes, like mashed potatoes. Mm-hmm. Now, might you be doing parsnips with rutabaga?
I think I might be dropping the parsnips. I've tried for 3 years, and I finally got kind of a crop this last year. But I think it's something I'm going to need to return to at some point when the grass.
Parsnips are really tricky. Mm. If anybody out there has any really good hints for growing parsnips, you can call. You can email us.
Are we in the wrong place for them? Really, somebody in Wisconsin was growing them really well, and they...
I think because they love sandy soil,
yeah.
And there's some really nice sandy spot. I mean, maybe not, but I... In the parts in the field that are pretty sandy, I got some decent parsnips. But when it gets a little heavier, they're not happy.
Okay,
and they
really
also are in the ground for so long. Mm-hmm. They take a really long time to germinate, and they're in the ground for a long time. So they have a tendency to get overrun with weeds, and they're not really like a high priority crop. So they are often...
Well, how are they different from rutabaga that you're willing to try rutabaga?
I think maybe just because I haven't tried them before. I also, I don't know. Yeah, maybe this is a terrible idea. Maybe I should not do rutabaga.
Oh, do it.
No,
let's try.
Are you trying to talk me out of it?
No, I'm delighted that you're doing it.
Grow rutabaga.
We'll see. Because, I just want to give it a chance. Yeah.
And besides, rutabaga is also used to be known as Swedes. So there you go. You have
another cultural reference is Carl Sandburg.
Mm.
His two books for children called The Rutabaga Stories.
Oh.
So if you get discouraged, do check one out and read.
I will.
They're nonsense stories. They're wonderful.
Those are the best kind.
Yeah.
That's great.
Oh, rutabaga. Yes. Okay, but how can I buy a rutabaga then?
Well, you know, you could buy me a kombucha.
Okay.
I'll bring you a rutabaga.
Okay. I'll give you some recipes for rutabaga. I'll help you market them.
Yes.
Okay.
That would be great.
That's good. Julia, do you have any tips or advice or encouragement for anybody? Now, we're not talking somebody that wants to grow on the scale that you do, but everybody's kind of looking longingly out their kitchen window now and saying, well, maybe I'll try to grow something. You can do this in pots. You can do it in a little space. What's an
pots
easy
of rutabaga.
Thing?
I'm trying to envision it. Okay.
What's an easy sort of thing to get started with? What would you suggest for a first-time gardener?
Oh, my goodness. Let's see. I think, sunflowers are fun. Marigolds are fun. Like, these seeds that really want to live, I think those are really great starters. I think tomatoes are tricky, but people seem to have really good success. So if you have a sunny window, I think for me, I think the key I've been learning lately is like to not start them too early, because I get really excited and like it's, you know, early March or late February and I'm like, I want tomatoes. So you seed them and then by the time planting time comes around and you have your last snow in April, they're just terribly unhappy. And then once they're unhappy, they don't really bounce back. They're kind of divas. So.
Okay, so you are not going with the global warming and planting any earlier than
no,
May
I think I'm
1st.
Going the opposite direction. I'm or maybe a little earlier than May 1st, but okay. not – I'm not – I like seeding them in flats definitely earlier than May 1st. Like, okay. I'll be seeding my tomatoes in the next couple of weeks.
Mm-hmm. But you're not going to put them outside?
Not outside until – definitely May.
Our May, fall June. last year was so long mm-hmm. and so warm. Maybe this is why I'm not a farmer. My temptation would be to think that I can start things earlier this year.
Oh, I don't know.
I mean, it depends.
They're both shaking their heads at me.
I mean, go
the
for
real
it.
Farmers are. No, I'm not going to do a thing. You know?
No, I mean, it's worth a shot, really. I mean, that cost of soil and seed and water and time is not very much, you mm-hmm. know, if you're doing it on a small scale. So it's, like, totally worth a shot if you want to try it earlier. Just and then you learn and do things differently or not, and that's life. So.
Well, you must have seedlings going on.
Oh, I do. But that's because one thing I have learned, I do not start them all at once. I have some early and then some later. And then if something happens, like I have been known to drop a whole flat of seedlings. This does happen. And like lost that bunch, but you have more than one and you stagger. I have learned to stagger the plantings a lot more.
Yeah, that's great.
And starting tomatoes too, especially if you're doing it just for your home garden. Just start
another innovators. One. Mm-hmm. I want to know if anybody's going to grow endive for me this year or chicories or... Those are kind of cold weather hardy.
Yeah. I can do that for you, Donna. Got you covered.
Oh, boy. I'm getting excited now.
Yeah. Donna has talked about the bitter greens, the more, you know, the hardier sort of things. And actually, last year, for the first time, I did try radicchio.
You did some in the spring. They were really,
yep,
really good.
Yep. I also had a...
I think I probably ate all of it myself.
I think you did. you ate all of it, and my enemy, the woodchuck, came along and ate a good chunk of them, too. So we're going to deal with that.
Be faster than the woodchuck. Oh,
yeah.
Dear. Oh,
yeah.
Dear.
How
much wood could a woodchuck eat if he ate radicchio all day long?
Probably a lot. They're big. They can eat a lot of things. They can eat a lot of things. You have to – the idea of planning, back-timing things is really – that's one of the tricks. You're not growing just for your backyard. Oh, if it works, it doesn't. Or what, I can always go to the Hy-Vee store if things work.
Sure.
No, things, it's important.
Yeah.
It's important. How do you know, okay, here we go, a pack of radishes, how do you know how many radishes that's going to be? Or how do you guess?
Yeah, I mean, there are Johnny's is a good example. They have a nice chart of, you know, like seeding spaces and then like yield expectations. In my experience, they have been rather generous in their yield expectations. Mm-hmm. Part of it is like planting frequently, planting more than you think you'll need. And when I started this, I started with the guidance of a couple of farms who have already been doing this for a long time. And so I already had a general idea of when to start and how frequently to plant things. But I think for somebody in a home garden, like, I think sometimes there's a feeling of like, you are really excited and you go out in the spring and you plant your garden and then you like walk away or you come back and weed, you know. But I think if you really want to keep enjoying your garden all season, you either need to plant things like kale and tomatoes and peppers that are like indeterminate and will keep producing, or you've got to keep planting. So like those like radishes and greens and I don't know, there are a lot of things that you can plant repeatedly throughout the season.
And there is good information on seed packets and in seed catalogs. You mentioned Johnny's selected seed catalogs. They have good charts. They do.
I have to say here that probably Joe and Lana at Onion Creek have mentored a lot of the younger vegetable farmers around town.
And Lana and Joe at Onion Creek Farm also are on the phone a lot to other farmers. Your garlic up yet? Is it time to harvest? We talk to one another. Yes, yes. I want to mention, too, about home gardeners or even Julia or any gardener. You gather seeds, and you may not use them all up in one season. There are some that you plant again, and maybe some varieties that you notice that the yield just isn't the same. Are there certain seeds that you don't plant again, that fresh seed is important?
Oh, man. I haven't really followed that very much. I've had pretty good luck so far. So I think if you have a lot of something left over, I think doing a germination test is a good idea.
That's a great idea.
And then you know whether or not it's going to.
Do a germination test by putting a wet paper towel.
Right.
Put it next to your coffee cup on the counter. And that does work.
Yeah.
Yes, it does. Again, look at the chart, look at the seed packet and see when the seeds are expected.
Mm-hmm.
And I've had luck with seeds that are 2-3 years old, that's fine. One thing that does not do well the next year, and I've read this, is spinach. Spinach seed, it kind of loses its vitality. So, and you can find this in references places too. There are certain things that don't do as well.
Is that all varieties of spinach?
Pretty much. It just kind of goes downhill. You can,
Is it their the actual yield or is it their germination rate?
Germination.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, germination.
Okay.
Yeah. In my experience, not that I'm a great spinach girl, but there are
spinaches.
Older seeds, you kind of have to, or you plant more and expect that, you're going to lose. You'll see on some seed catalog or seed packets, it'll say 90% germination rate when they're fresh. So maybe next year, maybe it's 70% germination. Well, you know, these are living things. Yes, they are. Well, Julia, do you have a contact website or something that could find out more about your farm?
Yeah, absolutely. I have a website. It's lacewingacres.com. I actually learned this morning that it's down at the moment, so that's getting resolved and perfect timing. But we are also on Facebook, so you can just
And how would people find your CSA and sign up for it?
Well, it would be the website.
Go out and have a beer and sign up for the CSA.
Sure. At a couple places around town, I've got brochures out, little yellow postcards at Wheatsfield on the bulletin board and at Alluvial. But I'm also on Facebook, so you can type in Lacewing Acres and it's there. But just the website, or you can shoot me an email, lacewingacres@gmail.com. All one word.
And if people sign up for your CSA, where do they pick up?
Yeah, they've got a few options. A lot of folks pick up at Wheatsfield, and it's Wednesdays from 4 to 8 p.m.,
mm-hmm.
Or folks can pick up at the farm, and folks picking up at the farm have a little more flexibility. They can pick up Wednesday through Thursday evening. And then I also offer home deliveries for an extra delivery fee. So I've got a handful of folks who do that every year.
Mm-hmm. But, so mm-hmm. you will be plenty busy.
Yeah, lots to do.
Good. So good luck in this season's interaction with your
here
environment.
Here we go. Another whole season ahead of us.
This is a good time of year for those of you out there who like to eat good food to find yourself a farmer. There's lots of CSAs, ways to connect up. Farmers markets, too.
Community-supported agriculture. I have a quick question for both of you. This is my culinary interest. What herbs are you growing this year?
Sage, winter and summertime.
Okay.
Hopefully rosemary, chives. I'm going to put in some container mint. let's see. Oh, oregano.
Mm-hmm.
I feel like I'm missing a couple. I think I'm putting in some lemon balm.
I've got about 5 or 6 different kinds of basil. I'll do borage and some edible flowers. And heaven knows, I'm still having fun.
Oh, cilantro, parsley.
Yeah. We're getting hungry.
Yeah. Okay.
I want to mention that to find yourself a farmer this afternoon at the United Church of Christ, which is kitty corner from the Ames downtown post office, corner of Douglas and
Kellogg.
Corner of Doug, Kellogg's and Sixth. The Farm to Folk CSA, Farm to Folk Community Supported Agriculture, is having a Meet the Producers Day from 4 to 6. There will be folks there to talk to. There's a lot of
CSAs. There's also a knife sharpening demonstration there.
Oh, well, there.
Yeah. All of us need sharper knives.
Amen.
Oh,
I need some sharper knives.
Yes.
Oh, that's a good thing to know.
And as a chef, I always encourage everyone to buy and invest in one good knife, like a really good one, like at least, you know, $50 or more kind of. It'll last your whole life, and it'll make cooking easier and much more of a pleasure. So that's today.
Yes.
4:30? Is that right?
Four to six.
Okay.
And there's a performance on... performance lecture. A lecture tonight by Sherry Sampson on campus.
7 o'clock in the...
Campanile Room.
In the Memorial Union.
Yes. And also, it's coming Saturday, speaking of dance, Commotion Dance Theater performance. Saturday, April 2nd, 7:30 p.m. in the Forker Building at ISU.
Oh, yeah, we got April Fool's Day coming up. Oh, boy.
Do something
ridiculous.
Plant some rutabaga, yes. You've been listening to the Donalana Kitchen. We've talked to Sherry Sampson. We've talked about seeds and spring with Julia Slocum. We've had music by Elka Baker. Support this fine radio station. And if you have something on your plate that you would like to share with us, email us, khoiradio@gmail.com.
Yeah, and if you're growing any really unusual vegetables, let me know.
We'd love to. Donna will eat them. Yes, you will.
I will.
Yeah, we'd love to hear from you. My name's Lana Noctigal.
And I'm Donna Prisgintas.
We've had excellent engineering by Rick Morrison. Plant a seed. Get to know a farmer.
Get out in the sunshine.
Eat good food and enjoy life.